Okay, it looks like we're live now. This is probably be the, we'll call this one the Brothers Wisp 28. I think we'll be talking about a couple different topics here. And as you notice, Greg is not here. Normally, normally we do it over Skype, and he screen captures it and does some post processing and editing, and I'm far too lazy for that. So we're just doing Hangouts. We've got Justin Miller from Virginia and Tomas Kernak from Slovakia. And what have you guys been doing lately?
I've been working on the new house. So. Oh, you mean work-wise?
Yeah, well, whatever. Whatever you want to tell the world.
We've got a technician that we dropped off the face of the earth. Can't find him, so we're covering for him and hoping he's doing okay and we'll show up. He's MIA. So
I believe when you mentioned that in our Slack chat, I made some comment about paving the way for Tomas over there to make a comment about how you should deal with that. And you picked up on it right away, doing RADIUS authentication for user controls and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not like that. Like, it's not malicious. His family doesn't even know where he is, so it's like a missing person report with the police at this point. But we just hope that he's okay and that he'll show up somewhere. So it's rough for us.
Right, right. And Tomas, you had mentioned that you've been doing some work with SSL and something or other lately.
Lately, I've been really just focusing on Unimus. We are entering beta period soon, so I've been working constantly on that. And yes, a part of that actually was that I had to deploy a bunch of certificates for SSL and encryption and security. So that was my project for like the 2 days the last week.
Fun. So let's see here. We talked a little bit about what we were gonna talk about. Miller, was it 636 changelog? Is that what we're gonna?
Yeah, it's pretty extensive. Did it come out of RC yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah, no. I'm still working on a lot of things in RC, but I've been working with them on an LTE card, getting some things squared away on the LTE card, and I think we've done two or three revisions of 636 RC now, and they're really working at it. So I look forward to my own things, obviously. What stuff have you guys seen in 636 that looks that excites you?
So there's a few things, actually. There's a few bugs in 6.35 with SNMP. So I've submitted a couple of tickets, and it's fixed in 636. So yay for that. Also, there is a bunch of new firewall additions. We've talked about previously about the new dynamic address lists resolving hostnames, which is in there. Also, there is the new raw firewall table, which I think we also mentioned in a previous cast. And it's a huge change log. The wireless repeater package, I think, is actually coming out with 6.36, which was mentioned at the previous months, right? And I think we also covered it. And just a lot of fixes, a lot of IPsec fixes, and it seems like a very nice version so far, feature-wise.
Yeah, I recall one of you guys, I forget who now, reporting that in certain instances, an SNMP query of the routing table would wreck the router. Do you know if they've straightened that out?
That one is not fixed yet. A couple of people, other people, reported that, actually. And it hasn't actually affected me so far. And our NetXMS pulls routing tables of all other routers every 15 minutes. So it's interesting that we are not affected by it. But by our network. But some other people from the brothers are. But that one is not fixed. And I might not remember right, but I think they said that one will not be fixed in version 6 at all.
Oh, okay.
But don't quote me on that. I just seem to remember that, but I don't have any sources for that.
I had a hard time, like at first glance, I just as far as the firewall and raw, I was like, okay, whatever, no big deal. And then I went back and read it again later after one of you guys had mentioned something about it, and it actually looks like it could really help firewall performance. I mean, it seems to, you know, if you can get the traffic that you want to drop affected by this rule with the reduced, you know, reduced qualifiers, then you get to take advantage of the increased performance, and it means all your firewall is a pretty heavy process, so that's...
Well, it's not just about the firewall, right? The raw table, actually, if you look at the packet processing diagram of RouterOS, the raw table actually takes place before firewall, before mangle, and other similar things, so it's more than just about firewall.
Okay.
Again, unless I am completely mistaken. And
performance thing, really, it's keeps it out of the connection tracking table, and it doesn't get, it's like fast path for firewall, basically. Just drop it before it gets to everything else. Short circuit it before it gets processed by anything.
I've been looking at some different DDoS mitigation type strategies, and of course MicroTech doesn't quite have full spec or anything like that running yet. And I think some of the concern I had is, okay, you know, if we start putting out thousands or tens of thousands of rules, it's obviously going to choke it just in the management of that many rules. And maybe this raw table would be that ticket to not kill the router.
You also added IP fix in traffic flow.
I
don't know much about it, so.
From what I said, it's basically just the newest iteration of NetFlow. It's still in the NetFlow family. It's not SFlow, but that it almost includes everything you would want.
AS information?
Looking at my 636 in the traffic flow area, I did not see AS information. But looking at the window here, there's got to be a good 30 or 40 different checkboxes of things you can include in that flow. It's a pretty exhaustive list, AS not being one of those pieces of information. But is there anything else in 636 that looks promising at the moment?
So far, it looks like a really solid release, so we can just hope that it gets properly stabilized as fast as possible, and then we can all deploy it and be happy.
Let's cut out a little bit there. Okay, let's hear it. Miller, what was the next thing you had suggested?
Since we are still talking about MicroTik, there is also 34.6 entering the bug fix release channel.
I haven't had a chance to use it too much. What's your experience with that?
For us, 6.34 has been really stable, other than a few SNMP bugs. So then we migrated to 6.35, which had those bugs fixed, but had other SNMP bugs. So, since hopefully by this point everybody knows that I'm a big freak about monitoring and, you know, management and all that, then SNMP is really important for me. So sadly right now, like 6.34 is really nice, it's really stable, it's got very little issues other than some SNMP issues. So it's been a fairly good release. Those SNMP issues, if people want to know, actually is that sometimes MicroTik responds with a wrong interface ID in the IPX table and IP table inside of SNMP. So what you get is actually that IP addresses appear to be on different interfaces than they are in reality. Again, that's fixed in 6.35, but 6.35 has some health SNMP bugs. So for example, 6.35 doesn't expose your firmware, your router boot version over SNMP. So that's why I mentioned previously that 6.36, which has all of this fixed, plus a lot of really nice new features. So I'm really looking forward to 6.36 becoming a good stable version.
I tried 6.34 yesterday, or maybe the day before. Your suggestion, I believe your comment was to stop using an agent version of RouterOS. we were talking about a feature request I made to MicroTik. I'm looking at, I was looking at ways of making it easier for me to do my job better, and not just providing the service to my clients, but also to the internet community as a whole. And there's BCP 38, and I believe it was 84 that superseded it. But basically states that you aren't going to transmit out to the internet information that didn't come from one of your networks. No IP spoofing, which is what all of the volumetric type DDoS attacks are. Is it they do a UDP request with an incorrect source IP to something out there, DNS server, NTP server, so on, to generate a huge response, and the IP address they used is of the intended target, so that target gets overwhelmed. Well, that doesn't happen if you don't allow traffic to leave your network that isn't from one of your IP blocks. And, larger networks can get a bit more complicated to manage that, especially if you have downstream customers with their own ASs and their own networks and their own IP blocks. I know that, there's internet route registries that you can parse and, get whatever block somebody says they're supposed to be using and scripting, build that into a firewall rule of sorts, or route filters. But I was trying to think of a better way of doing that, because that still doesn't solve your problem internally. For a small ISP, you may not notice, but there's still a chance it would happen. And as you scale up, you just look at a large ISP like Comcast. Certainly Comcast would have this happening, where if they did it only at their upstream edge, they could still have an internal DDoS, because one customer could be spoofing that IP address of another customer, and those provider edge rules wouldn't solve that. So I was, how can we solve this in the ISP world, make it easy for people to do that? Because most people don't do BCP 38 because of they don't know how, they don't know what it is, they don't want to maintain it, they don't know how they would do it. I thought, how can we get MicroTik to implement this on their routers in an easy solution? We had some back and forth both within our, within the Brothers Wisp as far as options, and then when I made my formal suggestion to MicroTik, we had some back and forth as to what the best solution was, and what I've come up with now is the best solution is... window just popped up. That's weird. The best solution that I've come up with currently
is to upgrade to Windows 10, isn't it?
No, already running Windows 10.
Okay.
No, it was another Google Hangouts window. It restarts itself occasionally for some reason. But it was taking the concept of route policy filters, unicast reverse path, that you would do on your whole network. But pushing it down to your tower router. And in MicroTik, currently, it's in IP settings, something else, I believe. You set it to off, which is just anything's allowed. Loose, which means when there's a packet coming in with an IP address, it checks that IP address for in its routing table. And as long as that IP address exists in the routing table, it allows it through. If you're running default, then have a default route, obviously then everything's allowed. But if you're running default free, then if someone's spoofing IP addresses from ranges that don't currently exist on the internet, then it would block it. Well, then strict goes one step further, in that strict, that IP address has to exist in the routing table, and the best possible path from that router to that IP address has to be the interface that the packet came in on to allow it through. Obviously, by name, that's more strict. And they said, well, just set it to strict, and then it'll stop that problem on the customer-facing side. But then you have the problem with, if you have multiple upstream paths, strict.
Actually, any kind of asymmetric routing.
Right, yeah. Then that doesn't work. You're blocking packets that you shouldn't be. And so I got digging to see if there's a way to have this tweaked in the kernel or somewhere, and sure enough, there is. And so I sent that on to them, where in the page I was looking at, it just told you, place in this path, change this file for this interface and change this setting. So by default, it's in Linux, it seems to be set the filtering per interface. And so now I modified my request to them to open that up to allow you to change those settings per interface. So you could keep it loose on all of your non-customer connections, but then any interface facing a customer has strict. Then that would be dispensed with at the kernel level instead of the user space, resulting in much less resource consumption to drop that. And it's not that it's a big problem, but I'm trying to find a way to make it easy for people to implement something they should be implementing. Because you could have the best policy or best practice in the world, but if no one uses it because it's difficult, then it doesn't do you any good.
Mike, I got a question for you. I got a question for you. You said loose checked your routing table to see if you had a route for that packet, and if you did, you'd send it out. You said the default would cover everything, so it's effectively useless if you run a default. But if you run full tables, if you had a route for it, it would be passed through. But in your example of the spoofing, you would have a route for whatever server in there. You would have a subnet in there, a prefix in there that would cover that server that's getting DDoSed. So you would still pass that packet, wouldn't you? So this doesn't solve your BCP 8438 or whatever problem. It's just...
Oh, right, yeah.
Read this wrong.
Well, you would use strict facing your customer. So that way then a packet comes in, and if the router doesn't see that interface as the best way to that IP address, which in case of your customer would be the only way to that IP address, if they've been assigned 2.2.2.2, the router would only ever accept traffic from 2.2.2.2 at the kernel level then, if set to strict.
Right.
Currently it's enabled or it's set on the router as a whole, and I'm asking for a per interface option. People spoofing. People still do spoof from IP addresses that aren't in the global routing table. It's for different purposes. They're not attempting to affect a DNS amplification attack per se, but there's other nefarious reasons for doing that. I don't know, but people do it, so I assume they're doing it for a reason. But and that was a hell of a tangent off of, or a hell of a monologue tangent off of whatever it was we were talking about before that.
We are talking about upgrading RouterOS versions.
Oh, yes, yes.
Whole story was because one of the possible ways that I suggested that could be implemented is with firewall rules that are automatically generated when your PPP clients connect or DHCP clients connect, because a DHCP server has a on-list script, and PPP profiles have on-connect and on-disconnect scripts. So you could actually dynamically, by scripting, generate those firewall rules, which would implement basically whatever discarding logic you like, right? You could be really creative there. It's scripting, so you can do absolutely whatever. And Mike was running an older version which didn't have this feature, so that's why we talked about the newest bug fix version and all that.
Because I was originally asking MikroTik for, just like they have for simple queues, where a triple PoE session or one of the various other ways they do it, it'll automatically generate a simple queue. I asked for automatic generation of IP firewall rules, and then that's where you had mentioned, well, you can do that yourself already. And after seeing that feature being available, I do see there being a ton of things that you could do with that. Scripting, and it's MikroTik scripting. You could do anything, whether it makes sense or not. But that seems like a really handy addition for a lot of the custom work that others may do. My 634.6. I didn't have time to investigate. I just downgraded immediately when I saw the problem. It was 3/4 of my PPPoE sessions didn't reestablish. Didn't take time to figure out why. It's not working, roll it back, and I'll figure that out later. They were, according to the logs, they were authenticating and then terminating. I don't know what causes that. I'll have to test that out, I guess.
And with that, I guess we can move to the next topics, right?
Sounds good to me, unless you guys got something else. What was our next topic?
The Mimosa wall plug?
Oh, yes. Yes, that, for those that didn't see it, Mimosa... announced. They call it the wall plug, but it's basically their own in-home router. Their multi-point platform, apparently the CPE side, has a rather reduced functionality compared to what we're used to. Well, obviously those that run MikroTik, just about everything has reduced functionality compared to MikroTik, but it seems like the Mimosa clients were even less functional than most, and as it turns out, the reason for that is that they were baking their own internal Wi-Fi box that then does all of those things. It does the NAT. It actually do PoE up to the outdoor radio. And regarding the PoE, currently it is just standard passive 48 volt Mimosa only power. Just for cost effectiveness. It sounds like they've got some on the roadmap plans to make that a little more flexible. They just wanted their first one out to be, you know, cost effective, and then work on the, you know, the ones with the added features. And Miller, what was the shortcoming that you noticed in the product?
No dual band, no care.
That has caused a bit of a discussion on the Mimosa users Facebook group. Not with Mimosa, you know, complaining about it. You know, that again falls into the they just wanted the first one to be cheap and easy, and they've got something else up their sleeves. But a lot of people were very sharply on both sides of the I have to have 5 gig in the home, and I mustn't have 5 gig in the home.
A lot of people are worried about it interfering with the 5 gig on the roof. That's what that you know comes from. But in my situation, you know, have to have 5 gig in the apartment. So
I think most of the disagreement comes from just one's environment. You know, what are you normally deploying in? For people that are perhaps more rural, you know, they may not have a problem in 2.4 from their neighbors, be it their neighbor's Wi-Fi, their neighbor's IP cams, or not, you know, non-IP cams, sorry, or insert any of another hundreds of 2.4 transmitting devices. So they simply didn't see the need for 5 gig. 2.4 works great for them. It has better range. Why do something else? But then also, conversely, you know, if they're in more rural situation, and you know they're not used to noise levels or working around noise, you know, they may think that a negative 80 signal is a strong noise, and you know, they'd rather not have 5 gig in the house at all. When you know, those of us operating in suburban areas, you know, a minus 70, you know, on 5 gig is just what you find everywhere. So you've got experience. You're used to working around noise, and depending upon how effective their magic is, they do claim to have auto channel selection, not just at boot up, but continual channel management.
Are clients made to jump that often is the real question.
Yeah, it's like pretty much having auto channel selection means very little unless it's well implemented and done properly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, you know, because, like, you know, I think a lot of people are picturing the, you know, auto channel selection that, you know, has been in a lot of Wi-Fi products for the past 8 years, where it picks the channel seemingly at random, although supposedly the lowest noise, at boot up, and then that's just where it stays. Given their experience with their auto everything in their point-to-point line, I do have a little more confidence that their solution will be better than those of yesteryear. You know, obviously you have to deal with, you know, in their point-to-point line, they're controlling both sides, so they can control how, you know, how the intelligence and how the decisions are made for moving channels, whereas with conventional Wi-Fi,
yeah, with standard clients, it's a completely different debate.
Yeah, you know, does a Galaxy S5 handle the disk, you know, handle the channel change as well as an iPhone, as well as a Chromecast, as well as an HP Ultrabook laptop. You know, I assume that that's a feature you can turn on and off. Maybe not, but, you know, I assume that, you know, for those that, whether they have devices that can't handle that.
Well, it depends a lot on the client and on the driver that's implemented on the client, right? Because on, like, Android or iPhone or any closed mobile OS, you have no way to interact with the driver. You don't even know what's in there, right? It comes with the OS. Whereas on things like PCs or Macs or Linux or whatever, it depends a lot on your wireless card. For example, Intel wireless cards are actually quite good and they have tons of features and settings in the driver. But if you have like a $5 USB wireless dongle, then that one might not even switch channels at all, you know, who knows.
It may not work at all if it's a $5 USB wireless dongle. Do any of the enterprise class wireless systems do something like that, or are they all pretty static?
Well, for the enterprise class systems, you have .R, right? So the roaming standard. And that's a whole different debate because for roaming support, like, okay, so roaming is another one of those terms which doesn't mean much by itself. You need to define what kind of roaming it is, right? So here I am talking about the R standard, which is the standardized way to do roaming, but for that you actually need a controller. And of course, the client also needs to support the extension. So .11R is an extension, same way as, for example, VMM is an extension to the wireless standards, right? So the client needs to have support and the access points need to have support. And as I said, for roaming and channel changing in wireless, it's a, again, speaking about standardized clients, it's a whole complicated, different debate because the responsibility and the intelligence to roam is implemented on the client side. And you never know how well the drivers and the networking stack is going to implement that on the myriad and the thousands of different wireless chipsets and devices which implement those. So it's not that simple, sadly. Like you said, for example, if you are a device manufacturer and you have a proprietary point-to-point link and you control both ends of that link, then changing the channel and roaming over to the new channel is extremely easy because you have full control and you can do in your proprietary wireless protocol whatever you want. But with standards, it's just more complicated.
I think the best assumption there is to assume that it's not going to work at all, you know, meaning your random wireless device, then assuming it's going to work properly. I know that on a myriad of phones, as I drive away from my house, it'll be claiming it's on Wi-Fi 3/4 of a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
It's still talking my home Wi-Fi at, you know, full strength or whatever, and like, no, you're not. That access point's in a basement.
It's not physically possible.
Yeah, like, you stopped talking to that thing 10 seconds after I walked out that door, much less, you know, 3/4 of a mile down the road. I think that'll be an issue. Now, I mean, that's not to say that, that it would have to change often. I mean, maybe a typical change is only once or twice a day or once or twice a week, in which case, you know, some hung connections, you might be acceptable. Well, and it's a home, so, you know, you're not doing anything important anyway. They also have the ability to do range extension. I believe they do that through some HPNA type system. I'm guessing there, because I believe that I saw that it was a wired extension. Yeah, wired Wi-Fi extension. So I don't know if you're doing HPNA through the power port or if you're actually having to run Ethernet across the house. But they will. They will put up another channel, another access point to provide more solid coverage in the home. I believe it's MSRP is $40. Got gigabit WAN and LAN. It does 2 gig. And looking at the features here, it seems to have most things you would expect for those air router and air gateway users. This has 4 SSIDs. Feel free to make guest SSIDs. That's a sticking point with the Ubiquiti users in that other than Unify, you only get one SSID. Is there anything else on that particular device? I know that I don't know if I missed anything from any of the chats I saw. Guess not.
Did I drop out for a second again?
Oh. No, I don't think so.
Did you say something that we didn't respond to?
Just as I asked that, my sound was gone again, so...
Okay. It will accept donations to send you a new headset.
Thank you.
Although we've not received any donations so far ever for anything, so you might be on your own. let's see here. Miller, what else was there that you had mentioned earlier? You had about four or five things you had brought up.
The point-to-multipoint product that's coming out, they just sent out an announcement about it. Looks pretty good. 30-degree beam width for 60 gigahertz. People on the Facebook WISPA picks have it installed already and beta testing it.
This is something that I've known about for 14 months, 15 months.
Yeah.
And I think they got a little more public about it at the WISP America show.
Yeah.
But it's always nice when manufacturers release things that you know about so you can actually
plan.
Talk about it. Well, mm-hmm. Talk about it in public.
Yeah.
Thomas, did you see that that product announcement?
Mm-hmm.
No. That company called MetroLink, IgniteNet is the company name. MetroLink is the product line. About a year ago, they announced a 60 gigahertz point-to-point product.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah.
But now they announced the multi-point product.
Ah, about the multi-point, I didn't know. No.
Okay. I don't think I've actually saw a price. I assume it's going to be about the same as the other ones. It's about $500. In my range zone, it looks like the maximum range you would consider is about 600 meters. It's a 30-degree sector, 1.3 or so gigabits per second. It runs on 60 gigs, so you're not going to have interference other than from water, I suppose. So as long as you engineer it properly, you should have solid expectations. From what I understand, it's very similar to the point-to-point line. Miller, what are your experiences? I know that you've got some of those.
Yeah, we've got some. We've had some problems with a couple of links, there's two links in particular that we keep having issues with, and one of them is a hardware problem, and the other one we're not quite sure if it's people on the roof walking in front of it, or you know, monkey business on the roof because it's an active construction site still. So, and then we don't know if the power has been turned off when people walk out at night. So we don't really jump on that one as much when there's a problem. But we were just trying to get the 5 gig backup to work on that, and it wouldn't link up at all with 5 gig, but it would link with 60 gig. And it was just weird. And I think I got to start over and restart by defaults because it's been upgraded like 3 or 4 times.
What's the latency like when you're working when the link's working?
Oh, it's super fast. It's like air fiber latency, you know, sub 1 millisecond.
Okay.
So you can tie a bunch together and pretty much have a kick-ass backhaul if you wanted, or light up a bunch of buildings with it. It's nice. So.
How many links of that are you running now?
I think it's like 10 links or something like that.
Okay. I suppose if you've got problems with 2 radios out of 10 links from a manufacturer new to wireless.
Some of the early models had problems with, had production run problems, and I think that's what the models we got. And I think that's the problem we're having with maybe both of these. So.
Okay. Yeah. And then for those that have lost track, you know, he's got the point to point line, but the multi point is expected to be very, you know, well, you can use the same antennas for your same. Oh, looks like we lost Tomas.
I'm here. Just battery running out, so I need to get the power cable.
Oh. You can use the same, like the point-to-point radios, those are the customer side radios.
Those are the clients, yeah, for this.
We're not going to be using it for residential anytime soon. Unless it's residential, meaning the entire building. But I mean, you know, but it does show that, you know, they've been looking at multiple bugs with the other product line. And
We're waiting on the new mounts to hit the channel still. Once those new mounts come, we're going to have to redo all of those links that we have, because those things are just bad.
For 60 gig, it's a lot more precise. So you, not only need A, precision, but B, something solid so it's not vibrating and moving.
Yeah, it definitely wobbles a little bit in the wind. Too much to be useful long term.
From what I saw, it'll support up to 8 clients initially, and on the roadmap they have support for 32 clients. I know that some of you are going to be looking at, my Cambium PMP 450 will do, 200 clients, but it's a different ball game, and you're not doing residential.
Yeah, I can't see running more than 8, to be honest with you. 32 is just outlandish, I think, because the whole point of it is to get a lot of bandwidth to a property, and if you're oversubscribing that much, then, so you could probably co-locate these guys really well as well, so it's almost go wide and not tall on it. That would be my suggestion.
I could see using it in like a business park, deploying within the business park. You've got business customers, they're going to pay a little bit more than residential customers, so you can afford the higher priced equipment. For those of you that sell just to standard businesses, they actually probably use less bandwidth than a home. You will have that range limit of about 600 meters and 30 degrees, so there are only so many structures you can get, in that space. Maybe 32 clients in the 60 gig world is the same as Cambium's claim of 200. You could do it if you tried, but would you really want to?
What's the next topic, Mike? Let's encrypt.
Sure, we can just bang right on through these. I believe both you and Tom there have done some Let's Encrypt work lately.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to talk first?
I've used it with Tomcat and Apache. I really want to get it going with the Unified Controller software. That'd be a pretty killer thing to do. I haven't tried it yet. Getting it for ESXi and all that stuff would be just great. But just the basics right now, Apache, and I've done it with Tomcat. So it's pretty easy. You just download you can pull the, I think it's Git. You can just clone it to your box, and then it's a script you run, and it downloads all dependencies for it, and then it looks in your Apache config and auto-adds SSL cert for 90 days, and then you've got to continually renew it every 90 days. And there are some scripts out there you can find, cron jobs, to just auto-renew it every 90 days, which works out pretty well. So.
I guess to take a little bit of a step back, for people that don't know what Let's Encrypt is, I just thought of that as you were saying that. I was like, people probably don't even know what this is. It's a service that was started by a whole slew of backers. I mean, just picturing the website now is 20, 30, 40 different companies backing it.
Originally, it's the Unix Foundation project.
Well, you seem to know more about it than I do, so why don't you tell us what it is?
I think it was started about 2 years ago, actually, for it to be integrated into all the major browsers. So it's a certificate authority, a free open certificate authority from the Linux Foundation, actually, not the Unix Foundation. And yeah, it's backed by a lot of major names in the industry. And the goal is just to let's encrypt everything, right? Let's have free, open, and easy certificates for all your HTTPS needs. And that's what it does. It's actually already implemented in all the major browsers and most of the major software out there. And yeah, like Justin said, you just get a little script which basically serves to authenticate you as an owner of the domain or the FQDN record. And it just verifies the ownership and issues certificates for that, and it does it completely automatically and renews them completely automatically for you as well. And you can have it even inject into your Apache or similar software, NGINX, etc., configs the SSL directives and everything if you want to. And it just makes it really easy to have HTTPS that's valid and functioning, and that's about it.
Yeah, I have to admit that just within the past week or two weeks ago, I noticed that the web hosting controller that I use, Innerworks, that it had plugins for both Let's Encrypt and Cloudflare. And
yeah, WordPress does that too. If you get a WordPress site, it's automatically Let's Encrypt. So.
Okay. Yeah, and so I thought, you know, well, Let's Encrypt does SSL. Cloudflare will do SSL and CDN and DDoS and all this other stuff. So I went with that. And then one of you guys in the chats had mentioned, well, what's it, you know, what's it like between the server and Cloudflare then? So, oh, well, yeah, I guess I can do do both Let's Encrypt and Cloudflare. But then, obviously, I was more worried about getting my Cloudflare stuff all straightened out, which seems to be fairly simple. I mean, it's already running. It's not quite how I want it yet. But then, you know, listening to Justin talk about all these other servers, and I thought, yeah, everything I have that's even internal that I have to keep clicking on the stupid, you know, yes, this website is fine.
For internal Let's Encrypt will probably not solve those issues, right? Because it needs to be publicly available. It needs to have a public FQDN.
Could I give it a public FQDN that then is only reachable say I make my...
The script verifies that you have control over that domain, so it actually, one of the functionalities of it is it starts its own web server on its own port or on the SSL port, and then the remote server downloads a file from it that verifies ownership, or you put a file inside the root of your web server and that verifies it. So there's a couple other ways of verifying, I think, but I've only done the one. So you just can't have it be, you know, mikes.lan, because that's not going to work.
Well, right, yeah. Yeah, after your comments, I thought about, so then I just have a, you know, vcenter.internal.mydomain that resolves internally, but you're saying then, though, that they have to connect into the server to verify it.
Yeah, and you could do that with your internal server, like if it was internal wiki or something and you want to have it, you could nat out that one thing and allow it through firewall rules to only connect to Let's Encrypt.
It's every certificate authority, so every CA, public CA, will only issue public certificates for services reachable publicly. So it's not actually just Let's Encrypt that does this, it's all public CAs. So if you actually want to have valid certificates for your internal network, you need your own internal CA, which is fairly common in enterprises and in bigger environments to have your own internal CA, which is use your own internal certificates, and then you can inject that CA into your browsers and other certificate trust source through like GPO policies for Windows, and of course for Linux, there's a myriad of ways to do that. And
you can also do that on a per certificate basis for each of those services too. If you don't really, you can add a self-sign into your trusted certificate.
Yeah, you can do it with the self-sign as well. Definitely.
Get away with it that way too, Mike. So.
But I would really not recommend going self-signed. It's issues.
Okay. But in your work with Let's Encrypt, Tom, you actually got it to be a part of your Puppet automation wizardry that you just click a button and spins up a server and it's already functioning, correct?
So what I did last week was that I pretty much secured about 20 vhosts, so 20 domains, 20 virtual hosts with a single commit into Git. So what I did is I wrote a module that integrates with our existing Puppet infrastructure and with our existing automation. So I now can basically, when I'm declaring a new virtual host, which is in Apache just a new separated space for a new domain, I just tell it that use Let's Encrypt for that domain, and that's it, basically. It automatically generates the vhost files, it automatically deals with all the security, and it automatically pulls a certificate from Let's Encrypt and automatically keeps it renewed. So, which is really nice about Let's Encrypt, right, because it works the way it does, is that you can completely automate it and have it completely self-contained within your whole automation, which you already have. So for me, whenever I want to now just pull up another website, throw up another vhost, it's just a single line inside of my Puppet manifest to have it completely HTTPS secure.
Once again, how you're better than the rest of us.
It's not as hard as it sounds, really. Or, well, not as complicated as it sounds.
Yet, just like when with the automatic IP firewalls and triple PoE, you know, I'm like, yeah, you can just make a simple MikroTik script. I'm like, I wouldn't even, like, go to the wiki, intro to MikroTik scripts. I don't even know where to begin. And now, obviously, with the Puppet stuff, I can, you know, I get those concepts a little better. I could probably get a little further with that, but... Yet sometimes some of us don't have quite the breadth of knowledge and experience with doing things the right way.
Or the time. That's a time. Big factor, too.
Time, yeah. Well, sounds like we may have talked that one a little bit.
Yeah, we're about an hour, I think, right?
I don't know. I don't
probably
know.
Even longer.
I don't know, because apparently there's no timer on the screen that tells me how long it's been going. So I guess we'll wrap this one up. As Greg would say, put a bow on it. And for those of you that are keeping track at home, this is the third installment in a row of doing them every 2 weeks. The most consistent we've been at anything ever, other than our own internal discussions. But hopefully we'll be back in another 2 weeks. So in that next 2 weeks, Miller, what do you plan on accomplishing?
Moving into my new home, hopefully.
And finding your headphones?
Well, they're in my pants at the other house. I gotta go back to pulling staples from the padding from the carpet that we pulled up.
The
AC is broken, and it's like 80 degrees up there with the AC on, so sweating like crazy.
Fun. Are you just rolling back to original floor, or are you just...
new carpet.
Okay.
Yeah. They had a cat and a dog and two dogs, and after we pulled it up, it was like the sand on the floor. It was just so much dirt and dust and stuff, so... We're, cleaning up and make it all nice. So.
Tomas, what do you plan on doing in the next couple of weeks?
As I mentioned in the beginning, we are releasing the beta of Unimus, mm-hmm. So I plan to focus all my energy on that. And also, I have training, so I'm actually training next week. So it's going to be a busy couple of weeks.
You're the trainer or you're the trainee?
I am the trainer.
Okay, fun.
I do MikroTik trainings, so yeah, MikroTik trainer.
I think I might be the only one of our group that's not a MikroTik trainer.
I'm not a trainer.
All right, well, I guess we'll have to start our own little club. The
non-trainer side. I've got one cert from MikroTik, and that's it, so... You have to have two to become a trainer, right?
Yeah, the basic one and at least one advanced, and then there is a few other requirements.
I've been using MikroTik for 12 years, and I don't have a damn thing.
You're not certified, but you're certifiable?
Some wouldn't say that, but... The next 2 weeks, myself, I will be busy. Actually, tomorrow I'm going to Chicago. It's not that far. It's like an hour. Staying at the wife's cousin's place for NANOG 67 for the 5th annual Midwest. It's a long name. 5th annual Chicago Ed Midwest Data Center Summit, of which I am a speaker at. I'm moderating a panel on connectivity, and then. Also next week, there will be the AMZIX More IP conference. I have three conferences next week.
How do you get any work done, Mike?
Obviously, there's some overlap. Well, some would say that I don't.
Yeah, it was kind of rhetorical.
But no, it, well, I mean, you know, with with the exchange, you know, you have to put your face out there, and I didn't even realize until just now. Do you notice this shirt, Justin?
You're representing RVAIX. Nice.
Yeah, I just happened to look down at the shirt as I was talking about exchanges.
You should wear that to a data center in Nanog.
Put in FaceTime. Get people to join the exchange. Get new markets. We're hoping to actually open up two markets yet this year. Still waiting on the one to finish the building sale so we can do it. But we're planning on opening up another one. I believe we've got it in our materials. So I can talk. St. Louis is what we're waiting to go on any day now. And then looking at going down Greg's way, doing something down in Houston. Got some things pending there, but. So then, I have no one doing the second week, probably catching up on work from the week before. But, alrighty, well, thank you guys for watching, and I guess we'll see you later.
Adios.